over 64% of the people were moving to this particular neighborhood, not for the schools, which were best in class, not for the location, but for the agricultural concept. Then there's a sort of gradient behind that of events and sort of community building. The broader community where there's things that are happening, there's volunteer days, there's UPIC, there's all those other things that every small scale organic vegetable farm does to bring community in, you know, music festivals and all of those wonderful things that are adjacent to farming. But for a lot of people, it's 40, 50% of their farm revenue. And so we're doing those things as part of our community. So we have full-time farmers. We have a full-time support staff. We have social media people who engage in each individual operation. We have sort of community liaisons that do things. And so the farmer doesn't have to be what we used to call a unicorn. They don't have to do every single thing. They don't have to know how to run a farmer's market and do transportation and do farming and harvest.
It's time for conversations about our food and how it's grown on Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.
We all know that people have left the farm and they've gone to cities. Cities have gotten bigger and bigger, and rural populations have been shrinking. And yet, as people get to the city, sometimes they figure out, wait a minute, I would like to have agriculture around me. There are positive ways to mix them together. And there's a lot of things to cover on that dimension. And I'm really happy to be able to welcome Clayton Garrett to Farm to Table Talk today. Clayton, welcome.
Thank you, Roger. I appreciate it.
And Clayton, you're with Meristem Communities, and there's several different activities that we're going to be talking about today. But I'm really intrigued by the interest in seeing elements of farming or farms brought into cities, because, you know, there's all sorts of issues and things that we can talk about. I know people that have lived on the edge of cities and tried to go out and live by farms, and then they say, wait a minute, I didn't know these cows were going to be mooing and you know, things like that. And once in a while, they get a whiff of manure and they think that, well, I'm not so sure this country living is all it's cracked up to be. But you're in like one of the largest cities in the country. Is it? It's on its way to being number two or number one or something, isn't it? The Houston metro area?
Yeah, Houston's massive by land use. And, you know, part of that's our car-centric culture and in the real estate terminology, people call it drive to qualify. So people drive, it's part of the economic framework of cities ever expanding into farmland and exurban land. And people are driving to qualify for their mortgages and you know, pushing the suburbs out and you know, gobbling up farmland and our kind of agricultural heritage along the way. Massive city. In fact, our project's on the third loop of Houston. And if you do an overlay of countries and states, you know, Houston's landmass area is accomplishing some of those or encompassing some of those. And it's not a great thing. You know, I think it's people spend more time in their car, there's health outcomes. And so I think it's a real challenge. And our land use requirements are impacted by a number of things, from weather to the economics and to our highway system and our subsidies around some of those things. So I look forward to talking to you about many of those things. We come from an agricultural background. So, you know, our property was our farm. We had a large organic farm on it. And, you know, we were impacted by some of the same development challenges that other farmers and landowners are. And so some of our story is related to how we chose to handle those and some of our expertise. And I look forward to chatting with you about it today.
Yeah, well, let's get into that, because so at some point in time, you have organizations that look at community development. They're developers. And so if some land comes open and they can start working at trying to get the streets in and, you know, get utilities and build houses and all the things that go with developing a community, But at what point did it make sense to you or in general that somewhere in that picture of development and building communities that there should be an agriculture element, that farming of some sort should could be integrated in into these developments?
Yeah, part of it was our background. And just to jump back, our story really starts with our first company was a edible landscaping company in Houston. So we operated a very niche business where we did, essentially small scale farming in people's yards. And we did it all over Houston. That led us to an opportunity to work with a real estate developer that wanted to do a small scale farm on their real estate project. The project was massive in the Houston suburbs, and they didn't know exactly how they wanted to accomplish farming or agriculture production or edible landscaping. But they were willing to take a chance on us, and that became about a 12-acre farm on a 1,000-acre master plan. So you can see sort of the scale that's happening there. And so we had some history. We had some, I think some adjacency to real estate and some adjacency to agriculture. And so for us, that's sort of the marriage of those two things became the story. So we started, our property was a farm and we wanted to maintain a farm on it. We just also needed infrastructure. We needed infrastructure for our employees at that time. We needed to be able to bring in roads and equipment. And we saw sort of the growth patterns that were happening. So for us, it was really a question of like, how do we keep an agricultural ethos? How do we do something that we feel good about and are interested in and engaged in? And then how do we bring people to the farm? How do we build community? I mean, in many ways, I think on the small scale organic vegetable production side, people are really doing agriculture as a means or method, I think both to farm and to build community. And so we were engaged in both of those activities and very passionate about it. And so, you know, our real estate project is a reflection of those values and ethos. And, we're super proud of kind of where we've gone and where we've headed. And, you know, from when we look at our peers in the real estate industry, we don't see the same sort of passion. And I understand why. It's very difficult. It takes a lot of energy and effort, and it's and to build community in the way that we want to is it's not necessarily the economic case that everybody, you know, wants to do. So yeah, just putting some streets down, just putting some houses down. Houses become product, which I still find amazing from a terminology standpoint. So that's kind of the framework of how we started thinking about it. And then we kept the vision. I think that's the thing that entrepreneurs and farmers and agriculturalists and people in this space, like, you got to keep the vision and figure out a way to make that happen. And so I think that's the true test for us.
Well, you know what I'm thinking about when you were deciding to do this, and you had a farm, and if you were going to be going into development, there must have been at some point that whoever was involved in a family or making that decision said, I don't want to see the farming gone entirely. You must have seen some nostalgia or some other opportunity to be able to keep a connection with rural. What was that? Because it probably would have been a lot easier in some respects to just flat take the whole farmland and make the whole thing into, just develop it all or urban. But there had to be some spot that you or some others had the vision and saying, wait a minute, this can be something more.
Yeah, we've been a part of the agri-hood movement, which is kind of the real estate term around connecting agriculture to neighborhoods or master plans in this instance, or, small scale commercial projects. We've been involved in that across the country and have spoken on it. And so I think for us, it was never really a question of keeping a farm or not keeping a farm. We have seen the value over and over again of how this can help build community, and putting homes or houses or real estate or mixed use or whatever you want to say on the development side, the real estate development side, onto a property. At a fundamental level, you are building community, you're building interest and marketing and doing those things, but you're building, you're creating a place that people want to be, and people want to be connected to agriculture. And for some people, it's it's a very passive experience. With some of the projects that we run, it's essentially a park, right? People are walking through or are just sort of observing. They have a very passive experience of the places where people are producing food, you know, vegetable production for the most part, for us. And for other people, it's, hey, I want to talk to the farmers that are here. I want to know more about it. I want to be part of it. I want to have a plot on the farm. I want to be very engaged. And it's a very deep experience. It's, you know, for some people, it's a very spiritual experience, as we all know. And so, you know, I think the ability of a farm next to a project where there's lots of energy and attention, and with the right leadership and the right structures in place, you can create a resource that can accomplish both of those things, the wide ranging, you know, nature of that experience, right? From a passive to a very active experience. And I think that's some of the beauty of connecting projects like this to people. So yeah, so there is a very big challenge of the disappearing of our farmland, the disappearing of our expertise in farming. But I do see some hope. So I'm hoping to convey that to your listeners here, is that there is some hope that people are engaged and interested. I think the challenge is you have to kind of meet them where they are, and that takes a different structure, skill set, and it's not always easy.
No, that's right. That's right. You know, you mentioned that one of the first projects you had was like, it was 1,000 acres that was going to be developed, and they set aside 12 acres. Now, when decisions are made like that, there's got to be principals, there's got to be financial people involved and so forth. So they have to get the picture. I mean, you mentioned other communities around the country. You have to paint a picture for them of why this makes sense. And to some of them, it's going to be that they're going to attract more demand to live there, because you have to convince them, don't you, that there's people that care enough that they would want to be in a community like that versus a community that simply had a park in the green space.
Yeah, and for scale in our project, our project's at 235 acres, and we've got about 42 acres of agriculture. So, you know, 20% of our space is agriculture. The early adopters in the agrihood movement have been people who are passionate, I would say, or sort of in any early adoption, you see people who are willing to take some risk, right? There's some inherent risk in that, being in that place and time, in a system. So for our first project, they were going to do agriculture regardless, and the scale was sort of a land planning scale, and there's a lot of inefficiencies in land, and there's even talking about acreage in a way can kind of be missing the point in some form or fashion, right? So from mono scale to kind of small scale vegetable production, your touch points and your intensity of production on various pieces of land can be very different. Mm-hmm. There is some component of I feel like when people talk about real estate projects, the scale can be, like in Houston market, 1,000-acre master plan used to be 5 years ago maybe was sort of a normative size project. If we're talking about that size project in California or the Northeast or whatever, that's a very different thing, right? And the density is related to that in a very different way. So from an agricultural standpoint, I think it's kind of the same. You have some intensity across what you're doing. And so we try to have those conversations with the development team. Like we think there's a need for both, which is a very pastoral agricultural experience, I think is lovely, and it's important. And I think it can solve a lot of real estate problems. So I think there can be some creativity around it where, you know, people may decide that they're just going to mow. They're just going to put, grass down and just mow, and in a wide scale kind of open space. And maybe that's a chance for agriculture to come in and to have some different type of engagement. So so it's absolutely a conversation we tend to have. And I think on the developer side, for the most part, we just see people wanting to understand the costs involved. They want to understand sort of the risk, you know, which entails some cost. And then they want to understand that somebody can take care of it in a way that's that they can articulate and that they can trust. And so there's a maintenance component typically to those things. And so that had been the scary thing around agriculture in real estate projects for a long time for most people, which is like, who's going to do this? How are they going to maintain it? How can they make sure that I don't have a huge expense coming down the road? And so our company, Agminity, solves those problems from a management operation side. And that's been, that's why we've seen a few more projects, but there is so much space, in my opinion, for projects like what we're doing, what other folks are doing, to connecting agriculture to real estate. And I think the response of people, and especially younger millennials and Gen Z and Gen X's, people are really interested in it, and they have a very emotional attachment to it. So they talk about their grandmother's farm, right? They talk about their food experiences. They talk about things that are central to their identity. And that is not the case when you walk into a apartment, right? You say like, this is functional or whatever. So I think that, from a marketing and real estate side, that has a lot of impact. And the farmers, that our team members who are part of this activity and engagement, they're doing it because they're passionate about it, because this is a mission for them, because they want to see food production for people. And so you kind of marry those two forces, and it's a powerful story. It's a powerful narrative, and it's really engaging in a way that other things aren't. A pool is interesting, but it's relatively expensive, and in our parts of the country, it's open 3 months a year, and it doesn't, you aren't addressing food insecurity. You aren't addressing resilience. You aren't seeing kids pick a carrot out of the ground and eat it, and so there's this sort of thing where everybody in the real estate, in various real estate projects has accepted a pool as being something that has to be built in every multifamily and every master plan. And I hope someday, my hope again is here that that maybe agriculture can slide in there with some percentage, some significant percentage where we're the new pool. And so a small hope in my framework, but I'd be excited to see that happen.
When you were describing an acreage to start with around 250 or so acres, and then maybe 40 acres into the farming, I can really pretty quickly see how it would be pleasant for people in the neighborhood to see it and go out and walk around it. But in my case, is like watch other people work, which gets to the issue of who actually then in this agrihood, who are the people that are actually turning the ground and planting the seeds and bringing the crop along and harvesting whatever it is that you choose to grow in those areas.
Yeah. And our framework has been, we initially years ago, 10 years ago, we started having conversations around agrihood, thinking that people would want to move to a community and they would want to do the agriculture. And so in our, let's talk about the South, for instance, the competition for attention and time is so intense, and it's very intense in periods of time that are specifically challenging to agriculture. So we have a summer, kids have summers off, for instance, right? And so in every school program or every hospital program that we've been a part of, you have community gardens that fail, and they fail in the summer. And by the time you get 90 to 120 days, your next crop in at the end of summer, when people come back, you're into a different season, right? And so that's one of the problems is farming is very hard work. It takes a tremendous amount of technical skill and knowledge. And it became apparent very quickly on years and years ago that we needed to organize the farm in a way that people could essentially be given the knowledge and tools with a lot of support, but they would have to self-identify that they wanted to do the work. And then that's the people who want to have a very intense experience. So most of our farms, we have something called a farm club. They can rent a plot on the farm. Farmers are providing transplants, compost, fertilizer, knowledge. A club, it's a very social club experience. So there's that social aspect of it. that's the most intensive thing we can do, which is essentially provide them the ability to farm for themselves. They are choosing their own seeds and what they're growing and the quantities, and they're doing it in a way that is specific to their knowledge, but also like specific to their community experience.
Right.
Then there's a sort of gradient behind that of events and sort of community build, a broader community where there's things that are happening. There's volunteer days, there's UPIC, there's all those other things that every small scale organic vegetable farm does to bring community in, music festivals and all of those wonderful things that are adjacent to farming. But for a lot of people, it's 40-50% of their farm revenue. And so we're doing those things as part of our community. So we have full-time farmers. We have a full-time support staff. We have social media people who engage in each individual operation. We have sort of community liaisons that do things. And so the farmer doesn't have to be what we used to call a unicorn. They don't have to do every single thing. They don't have to know how to run a farmer's market and do transportation and do farming and harvest and be an equipment maintenance person. And so part of the nice thing about having a little bit bigger of a project is we can start to bifurcate some of those roles and responsibilities. And so, and that's what a real estate projects need, that when you have, you're relatively people intensive. So people can walk up to every farm team member, and we call our team members farm educators, because that's a big part of their role, is to communicate what we're doing and to be experiential alongside the community and whatever that looks like. But their day can get, diverted, let's say, by community members. So somebody walks up on the farm and they talk to Nathan, who's one of our great farm team members, and Nathan's hilarious and he loves to talk to people. And so there goes some of his time, right? And so we have to capture that in a bit of a model that supports that behavior. And that is what the community members want. And that is what the farmers actually want, some of that as well. That was one of the initial structural challenges of having community farms and full-time employees and having production schedules and everything else that goes along with agriculture in a real estate project where this is an amenity, right? This is something that is attractive and interesting and is going to draw attention.
Does a community then support with a homeowner's fee that is helping with the people that have to be paid to supplement, volunteer work too?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. That's the model we've seen is, and I think there's a good conversation to have around the subsidization of farming across the country in many ways. So I think you and I could talk for a long time about that in all sorts of forms and fashion. So in our model, there is a payor that is paying, and it's typically been a developer funded capital expenditure. So a developer is kind of setting up the organization of the farm. And we've had conversations with cities and hospitals and other folks who are in that role. So you could say it's an owner. An owner is setting something up. And then there's a payer that's a maintainer. And so the two mechanisms we currently have are HOAs, that this is just like a pool. We're just like a pool contractor. We're just like a landscaper from a contractual standpoint. And the HOA is paying those service providers to do a specific scope of activities. And those activities are related to the mechanism, the thing that they're trying to accomplish. And so, we get paid for that. Now, what's different about us is agriculture is producing something. So we're producing vegetables for sale, or we're producing events, or we're doing things. And so the easiest way we felt like it made sense was to return that income to the HOA or to the special utility district. So that's the other mechanism, is sometimes you get special districts. And so there's in different states, there's different districts that are part of the utility framework. And so they have quasi city municipal powers. And so sometimes they can do things like they can maintain their own property. So if you're on a CDD in Florida or a MUD here in Texas, you can pay for the services to maintain your property. And so sometimes agriculture can be part of that experience. So those are the two. So yes, we have a management service contract with an entity. That entity pays us, and we make sure that we're able to pay our employees and our team members and provide expenses, you know, provide all those receipts, provide income, return income that we earn back to those. And so hopefully you have a normative, you know, annual assessment that makes sense, right? And so that also takes care of some of the challenges related to agriculture, like hurricanes and interruptions in COVID, because you just really lose some of the amenity framework if you don't have some of that support. And I do think that is a big part of the challenge that private operators have, right? Is these economic winds, and agriculture is incredibly, incredibly challenging. And so we feel for the people that are, and we used to be in that place where large scale production, organic agriculture, where we were at the whims of, you know, hurricanes in Houston and soils and everything else. And so, so this model provides a little bit of a professional support, but it also provides the real estate operators a consistent product. And so that's the goal on both sides.
So are there restrictions on what chemicals can be applied?
Yeah, it's less, in our mind, it's less about restrictions being placed on us and more about what we're willing or not willing to do. So we come from organic agriculture, sustainable or beyond organic, or whatever you want to call it. We run, one of our farms is USDA certified organic. But, you know, we're only interested, our team members are only interested in doing agriculture in the means and method that are for human consumption. And so we don't use any chemicals at all. And you know, that's part of our belief system in regenerating our soils and producing amazing tasting vegetables and taking care of the humans who operate our farms and ourselves. So it's never really been a question from any of the real estate developer partners. They kind of, everybody seems to naturally understand the value there and the human orientation around it. So it's interesting. You asked me that question. I thought, I don't remember the last time I even had a conversation around chemicals with any sort of provider. People just kind of were like, oh yeah, we're doing organic, you know, sustainable production.
Well, and then there's so many things to look out for too, because if you have, like, if you're doing conventional sort of spray applications and so forth, there could be drift, and you've got people living Absolutely. Right there, and so they that it would seem like you would especially have to be doing these kind of arrangements.
So. Yeah, and I think, you know, there's been a beautiful change in the past 10 years around specialty equipment that's really at a different scale, right? And so I think that has changed, you know, a lot of the no-till applications and everything else. We've been able to see a change in the equipment where you can kind of scale up. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, the Gabe Browns of the world, there's been a mid-size, we used to call it like a mid-size agricultural change. And so that's been helpful for diverse vegetable production and some small scale, you know, ruminant production. And so I think that's really helped projects like ours. And again, when you're in the real estate, you're not really in the real estate adjacent agriculture space. Like you're not really talking about the huge swaths of agriculture. I mean, there is, a couple of our projects, there's large scale corn right next to the real estate, you know, within the buffer zone, and you could get drift, and, you know, nobody seems to pay attention to that. But when it's your own project and you're sort of responsible for it, I do think that becomes very heightened around what you choose to do. And it's just easier. The economics don't support doing chemical corn next to real estate, you know, essentially, because you just don't make enough money per acre, right? So that's another factor.
So of this production, which you can, I mean, I've had a lot of stories of people that are just producing incredible amount off of, it's amazing how much can come off of an acre, you know. Now with that though, is it all either being sold, or for somebody's running their own plots, can they take it, or is it some of it redirected to charities? How's the distribution?
Yeah, as you can imagine, the answer is all of those things, right? So we produce more than we harvest. So our harvest, you know, a large part of our labor could be in our harvesting And so we have a regular donation. The people who are running their own plots, there's a beautiful thing that if you're there on a Saturday morning early, you'll see people start to barter, across, yell at their neighbor about if they want something that they're picking and vice versa. And that's this really lovely thing. We also have a farmer's market at a couple of our, that's on site at a couple of our real estate projects. And so there's means and methods for the farm club members to staff a table and to sell. We do regular donations, and then we harvest. We do a sort of choose your own. We're like a lot of the CSAs that have kind of moved into, I think we used every CSA software that's existed over the past 10 years, but we moved into a kind of choose your own adventure on the CSA side. So, we're basically picking for boxes on a weekly basis. And so our production's kind of dialed into the scale that we're currently at. I think that, we're always, and we've got some restaurants in town that we do, almost everywhere we are, we have a few people who want to have the consumer experience that we can provide as a secondary sales channel, to the restaurants in town. So I think those are our main channels. And then, sometimes festivals and other folks and kind of friends in the industry or the community's doing something that we're growing something specific for, and kind of all that happens that, the production and sales are just one factor. And I think that's one of the things that's freed up the farm team to be able to provide a little bit broader of an experience. And so, so we definitely, till in some plants that we would otherwise harvest if we just had to produce and had to sell everything.
Yeah. So I'm wondering, have you done some follow-up research with people that have moved in, that the homeowners in the area? What kind of feedback do you get after they've spent some time living around a farm?
Yeah, that's a great question. And we are working on a very interesting program with one of the natural institutes on trying to articulate some of the very specific questions around agriculture and health outcomes. And so we've done a number of different things. I'll tell you, one of the surveys we did years ago was around choice around moving to this one of the large scale master plans. And we got back results that was like over 64% of the people were moving to this particular neighborhood, not for the schools, which were best in class, not for the location, but for the agricultural concept, we called it. And that was still, in a lot of people's minds, it was relatively undefined. They knew it was a concept. They knew there was a farm there. They didn't necessarily understand all the details and all the programming like we're talking about today. I think ultimately this space is so young where there's health outcomes and people's engagement and interest around like a new scale agricultural project. I would love to see that research that you're talking about. I'd love to be a part of it. And I'd love to know if anybody else has, done anything similar. I think people self-select into these things that have already some interest in it. And I think that's probably some of the outcomes that you would see is related to that. And so I'd love to have a good control group and all those other things.
I've seen some surveys that are trying to determine the health of a community, literally, and the individuals living in different communities. And I signed up so I could see what it was all about. And I think it's the National Institute of Health has something called All of Us. And they're trying to get like 2 million people in, and they're trying to have you, measure all these different things about your health. But they sent me this survey to fill out, and I mean, like 5-6 pages, it seemed like, were all about describing your community, because it was directly related to whether or not you felt safe, whether you could walk around, and whether it made you want to go outside and walk around. And as you were speaking, I was thinking about it. You get this kind of a situation where people already in your communities are probably getting their 10,000 steps in. They're out walking around and walking their dog and so forth, and then possibly additionally paying to go to a gym somewhere a couple times a week. or they've got things set up in the treadmill in their garage or something. But they can add to that, then they could volunteer and go spend Saturday morning, you know, working in a garden. And it has to be a positive thing for the general health of individuals too.
Yeah, and I think the we have a loneliness epidemic in our country, right? I think it's been talked about in lots of ways, and I think people in rural places experience it just the same way as people in urban places. And I do think having more tools to deal with loneliness and to connect community, that's another way to say the same thing, I think, is impactful. And I think this is just one great tool. I think the built environment needs to speak to walkability. It needs to speak to being able to see and meet your neighbors, those kind of inadvertent connection points that you can have. And, you know, I think it's like, I would love to know more about the National Institutes of Health study on how they defined community, right? It's like, do you talk about your immediate community? Do you talk about your street? So what is the framework? What is the macro and what is the micro? And I do think that there is a way to solve some of those things through the built environment. And I think that part of the built environment should include agriculture, you know, and I think that is my thesis as a real estate and agriculturalist. And I think there's some real beauty to that experience. So absolutely. I think getting out into the farm but getting out into the sunshine, meeting your neighbors. And if this is the thing that, you know, sparks your joy or interest, like, I think that's absolutely what should happen.
Yeah, I just picture people out around your farms that are smiling and doing some work and seeing other people, and just makes them a better place to live. One other thing I wanted to ask you about: do you ever see the potential of getting livestock into these settings?
Yes, I mean, I we're believers in the sort of the regenerative framework around where you have ruminants improving soil health and tilth. And I don't see livestock as a nuisance by any factor. I think there's a lot of education that needs to happen around grazers. For the most part, I think like at Indigo, one of our projects, we'll have large scale chicken tractors, and that'll be, I think, very engaging and interesting for lots of people. Larger ruminants, we typically don't have the space. And so, I think it again goes back to sort of the intensity of which you're going to manage the operation. But I believe that if you eat meat and are engaged in that process, you should be connected to it and your community. It's there should be some ability for that to be, you know, local and have some education around it. And so that is part of our ethos. And each project's really case by case in a way. So on some of our projects, they're massive. They start out multi-thousand acres, and then over time they're being developed. And so there you really do have an opportunity to have some scale of animals, grazers, and herds. And so, you know, we've seen goats, we've certainly seen, you know, cattle operations and been part of some of those early conversations. I think we, on one of our projects, we have goats and they're Nubian, and they're not actually for dairy production on our farm for a bunch of reasons, from health codes and from the capital required to do that. But they're super fun to be around, right? And they provide a service for the farm. So they get down in some of the ditches and they're browsers, and they help us clean up things, and they engage the community in a way that some other things don't, right? Pure vegetable production. You know, I think you mentioned seeing smiling people out on our farm. Most of those people are sweating tremendously most of the year in Houston. So they're not always smiling around that behavior, but when they see goats and some chickens, you know, that does tend to engage them differently. And so I think that's important for the agricultural experience.
You know, I know people in a lot of communities are grappling with, should we let there be chickens? And maybe there could be five or six, you know, roosters and things like that. And that's interesting. And it's, you know, getting some eggs. And so it's kind of a kind of a frontier. Well, I really like what you're doing. We've covered a lot of ground. What have we missed that you wanted to be sure that we were bringing up?
I tried to layer in some hope here because I think some of the agricultural story is a tremendous challenge. And I've seen in our business that people are excited about projects like ours and they're engaged and interested. They just don't know how to do it. So that's a difference than being pessimistic or sort of anti. So even the experience with, you know, city staff members around chickens in yards, I think there's so much kind of natural fear and so much it's easy to be lazy, I would say, and just deal with the status quo and not sort of challenge some of those beliefs. So I'm hoping to convey a little bit of hope around if you're passionate about something, there's a way to engage people where they are, and there's a way to kind of challenge some of the norms. And understand that people's fears are real and that they have validity, but there's maybe some other means or mechanisms to deal with the particular challenge. So, you know, I think that's from our regulatory standpoint, from our built environment standpoint, and certainly from our agriculture, where there's ways to engage people in a meaningful way. And I'll tell a quick story is, one of our first questions that we get from real estate developers is, what happens if people steal vegetables? You know, you were producing these great vegetables, and then what happens if people come and steal them? And I say, look, if they're willing to come and harvest vegetables, you know, but first of all, we have never seen that be a problem. There's some communication that needs to happen, some signage. If you see people, you sort of have a conversation with them. There's very informal ways to deal with sort of a misunderstanding, let's say, about whose vegetables these are. But it's also the case that if people are willing to harvest vegetables, then we can put them to work, and there's other ways to do it. So I think that's a small example in my mind of how we can be informal and include people and have some hope around kind of what we're trying to accomplish together, and maybe not be so fear-based and so regulatory. And which I understand why that happens, but you know, I just wanted to provide that small incentive for people to kind of push beyond some of the normative behaviors.
Well, then, before we wrap up, let's just go and look into the future. Then, so as the way you're seeing it right now, and if you're looking down the road over this next, you know, I don't know, 5 or 6 years, how do you see this evolving? And what's the future look like around the country, not necessarily just in Houston, because you experience in broader areas too.
Yeah, we have a housing crisis in our country. And so what I think the outcome of that is, the housing crisis is both on the supply side. I think we are undersupplied from a housing unit standpoint. And that also creates an affordability crisis, which means that the land that goes into development becomes more expensive, which has a result that projects are going to be denser. So there's going to be more people on smaller parcels. And the built environment can solve these problems. And we look at cities and there's, you know, more people in smaller areas, and that's part of the density equation. That doesn't mean that all land is going to disappear. It just means that the land that's adjacent to that sort of density has to address a challenge. It could be drainage. It could be infrastructure. It could be agriculture. And so my hope is that as we're seeing sort of the pressure on land prices and affordability, we also then get to see some, and again, this is an optimistic view, but where there's people, there needs to be recreation spaces and parks and whatnot. And my hope is that we can bring some food production and, you know, adjacent to those areas. So I think the economics around housing is very challenging, and I don't have a crystal ball to see where that's going to end up. But I do think we're going to be in closer proximity to other people. And I'm hoping that, you know, with cities and municipalities, we can start working into some, you know, food security issues and resilience issues, and agriculture can solve lots of those. So that's my hope, is that we start to see more and more projects that are addressing land, and it might be more intensive on smaller acreage. I think that's a quite real possibility. But that's what I see happening.
Well, it sounds to me like you're going to have a role to play in making that happen and having that vision become a reality. So how can people get more information on your programs and reach out? And you've got a lot you've offered us today, but somebody's listening to this that's going to say, gee, I want to pursue this. I want to understand how this might be able to happen and apply it to my area, or know more about what you're doing in the Houston area. Where do they go?
Yeah, we've got agminity.com is our agricultural amenity services company. Indigocommunity.com is our community in the southwest suburbs of Houston. And then maristemcommunity.com is our development company. And you can reach me and our organization at any of those. There's associated contact forms, and there's great information on them about what we do, case studies and whatnot as well. So those are great places to jump off.
So Maristem, MERISTEM.com. And Indigo.
Maristem Communities. Yeah. MaristemCommunities.com. Yeah.
Okay. MaristemCommunities.com. And Indigo, just Indigo.com?
IndigoCommunity.com. Yeah.
And IsCommunities.com. And what was the first one again?
Agminity.com.
What?
Agminity. AGMENITY.com. Agminity. Agricultural. We smashed the words agriculture and amenity together and created our own word, and it's agminity. So that is the company that's the farm service provider.
Yeah. Okay. Well, see, there's somebody's listening to this. I'm glad Roger asked him to spell that out.
Absolutely.
It's not obvious. Well, I really like what you're doing, and I appreciate your joining us. It's been a great conversation, and good luck with these programs. Thanks for being on Farm.
Thank you, Roger. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
You've been listening to Farm to Table Talk with your host, Roger Wasson.